Welcome to Top 5, a show where we count things down from number 5 all the way to number 1. This week on the show, I think it's a topic we've done before. Most of mine may still be the same. Who knows? Top 5 tabletop games. Top 5 tabletop games. Not video games. Right. Not necessarily RPGs, although you can play RPGs at the tabletop. Yep. But tabletop games. Matthew, what do you have for your number 5?
I feel like we have done this without the specific framing, but when you say tabletop, I'm like, hey, that opens up a lot of opportunities. And so it reminds me of the days of my youth when they showed me what it was to be a man, doodly-doodly-doo. My grandparents had, for some reason, just tons of, like, the really, really expensive, cool games. And one of the things that they had was something that I've never seen anywhere else in the world, a deluxe version of my number 4, Kinect 4. You know how usually your Kinect 4 is this, like, spindly plastic affair that looks like it literally looks like what you get your models and your miniatures pinned to. It's all, like, really, for some reason, this was this big hard plastic thing from, like, the 50s or something. And it had actual, like, high quality red and black checkers to play Kinect 4. And so occasionally I say to myself, I want to play Kinect 4 like I did when I was a kid, but it's never quite right because I grew up with this super awesome Kinect 4 board. So, you know, and also because Kinect 4 is a game that involves, like, mathematics and, like, three-dimensional strategy. And these are things that I don't like. I don't know. But I always love to play Kinect 4, even if I'm not necessarily, you know, focused on it, just because you get to go pretty sneaky death. And then, of course, you know, the whole thing just falls apart and you can start over. It's really nice.
Nice. Rodrigo, what about you? What do you have for your number 5?
My number 5 is a tabletop role-playing game.
Mm-hmm.
We played it a lot. They say it takes like 10,000 hours. How many hours to become
10,000?
Yeah, 10,000 hours to become a professional at it. I am pretty close. That's Dungeons and Dragons 4th edition. Specifically Dungeons and Dragons 4th edition. It's a tactical game. It's pretty tight. It doesn't, like, have a lot of places where there can be, like, confusion or things that don't work very well, as long as you stay away from a lot of the internet. Not homebrew stuff necessarily, but actually the stuff that Wizard was pointing out during the lifetime of the game was very often not very well play tested. If you wanted to get into D&D but want to have everybody yell at you at all times, definitely check out Dungeons and Dragons 4th edition.
All right, very nice. My number 5 is the TMNT Adventures Changes Constant board game. This is an updated rule set of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game from, I want to say, 2016. This is the 2020 update of that. The reason why I am putting the 2020 reboot, because that's technically what it was. The first one was a Kickstarter, and so only people who were in on the Kickstarter got it. This one is more of a retail thing that you still can't buy because IDW Games went out of business. But the idea is you play the Turtles against everybody from the comic books, the Eastman and Laird comic books, and sometimes a little bit from the very first cartoon series, but not so much. It's still very much a comic book oriented game. 1 to 6 players can play, and you can either play cooperatively one against the system. And that's one of the things that they did with this system is they updated it to have an AI run the villain, or you can play it one against many, in which case everybody teams up against a single person who runs the villain and all of the minions for that game. It is good. I really like this game. There's a dice sharing mechanic that happens at the start of every round where all of the players get to share a die between them. So, like, if Rodrigo and I are playing and I'm on Rodrigo's left side, I can put a die between us and he can use that die and I can use that die. And likewise, if there's somebody on the right side of Rodrigo, he can also use the die that they have in between them. It's good. It's not super challenging. It is a little bit tactical. in how the game plays. It can play anywhere from 30 minutes to 2 hours. We've played the first version of the first edition of this game on Munchkin Land that you can find over on the Major Spoilers YouTube channel, Major Spoilers video. And I just really adore this game. I liked it more than I thought I should. And I forget what the actual name of the system is called. I want to say it's their Adventures system. The Adventures system, again, before IDW game shut down, the Adventures system was also used in the Batman the Animated Series game, but I haven't really had a lot of time to mess around with that game. But it uses the same mechanics. So in theory, kind of like the Funko Pop board games that were released a few years ago, they're interchangeable. So I could have Batman come in as a character into the TMNT game, and likewise the TMNT characters go over and play in the Batman game, and it will be seamless as far as their integration. So it's a fun game if you can get your hands on it. It is very expensive if you try to find it on Amazon. I think right now you can find them anywhere from $200 to $500. That's how rare that they are. But definitely a fun game, and I really enjoy it, and that's why I put it at my number five. Moving up to our number fours, Matthew, what do you have for number four?
In the year 2019, I moved into a new home. And one of the things that this new home afforded us was the ability to do new stuff. So we started doing Monday game night, family game night, where everyone would sit down and we would play a game. And so we have a bunch of games and we started adding new ones. And one of the ones that ridiculously turned out to be the most fun in the, I think in the short term for sure, was a game, a card game called Taco versus Burrito, which is apparently a game that their selling point, it was created by a 7-year-old. And you basically, you have your little card and you choose whether you're making a taco or a burrito. You have a handful of cards and you come up with, some of them are pretty gross, but most of them are these goofy toppings. So you'll have like things you can put in your burrito, but then you also have, you know, cards that will throw someone else's burrito out or steal something from somebody else or cause a negative effect. And it's got a little bit of Uno to it. It's got a little bit, not necessarily deck building because you're not necessarily making a deck, but you're trying to collect a taco that gives you the highest score and also play with, you know, the goofy things. And while it's not something that is endlessly replayable, because after a while you do start to realize, you know, hey, this is what's coming up, or these are all the things we have, you want to grab your expansion packs at that point. But you do kind of get to a point where it's a good game, it's a fast game to play, and it's one that if you only have a little bit of time, say, you know, everybody starts like having other things to do on Monday because, I don't know, Monday game night was a great idea, but we also have lives. You get to a point where you're like, you can play something quickly and then people can go off and, you know, be teenagers or whatever people do. So I actually think that this is one you can get for maybe $18, $19, probably available at your, you know, your local gaming shop or, I don't know, your
I think they have it at Target. I think they have it at Target in the game section.
Yeah. And the thing about it that I really appreciate is that it's not gross. It's silly gross, if that makes sense. So like sometimes when you're playing a game, it's like just, you know, it's the souls of a dead monkey. You don't want something like that, but it's kind of a whimsical, goofy kind of gross, which is always nice to play with. And worst case scenario, even like the really, really old staid people who are like, I have no sense of humor. I think that there's something in here that they will kind of go a little bit as they go along. My number four, Taco versus Burrito.
Cool.
I always play taco myself, but
all right. Rodrigo, what about you? What do you have for your number four?
My number four is another tabletop RPG. Are they all going to be tabletop RPGs? You'll just have to listen to the rest of the list to find out. My number four is Fate. Fate is a rules light, relatively rules light, role-playing game. Comes in several varieties, such as Fate Core and Fate Accelerated Edition. Fate Accelerated Edition is a good game if what you want is to smash a one shot together, and you don't care too much about like the actual crunch of the game. If you do want the game to have some like mechanical hooks that you can hook onto, then you should play Fate Core. And add whatever else. There's lots of different settings for Fate Core. There's some individual settings, but for example, there's like a Dresden Files setting for it. There's that Cthulhu.
Yeah,
there's that Cthulhu thing that's more like a Back to the Future or like a Terminator adventure than you know, Call of Cthulhu. It plays with special dice, so that is one thing that actually, I guess that's true of Dungeons & Dragons as well. If you don't have 20-sided dice around, you're going to have to buy some. But Fate uses these special 6-sided dice called Fate Dice, but those of us that started playing it before that, we still call them Fudge Dice. And if you go to a game store, they might call them Fudge Dice still. So, get yourself a set and sit down with the Fate Core rulebook. It's a very quick read, and I definitely recommend it.
Like the Fate Accelerated, and I think even the core book, like $5 for the starter book, and you can get it and learn it super, super quick. So,
yeah.
My number four, I forgot to mention the TMT game from IDW Publishing. One of the designers of that game is one Kevin Wilson, who many people may know from Descent. He is also one of the designers for my number four game, Arkham Horror, the card game. This is a cooperative living card game where you play the role of investigators in the world of H.P. Lovecraft's cosmic horror, and each set takes on one of the tales from H.P. Lovecraft. So you do a whole Dunwich Horror version. You've got one that the newest one that just came out is takes you down and does the Mountains of Madness. There's a whole bunch of different ones. The problem is it can be very expensive. You don't have to get every expansion, but every expansion comes with new characters that you can play and new cards that you can add into your deck to make your character better or stronger or whatever. And so that can get kind of expensive. But Dr. Brad Will and I love to sit down and play this game. We usually do it with two players, although we have had D&D Brian and some other people play with us in the past. It can be frustrating at times because, in my opinion, most Fantasy Flight games are not designed to be easy wins. They are super challenging, and you have to figure out the puzzle in order to do that. And I think there are more losses if you go out to the Board Game Geek website. I think there are more losses in this game than there are wins for people that report, but it's still super fun. I love the mythology that Fantasy Flight is built around their version of the H.P. Lovecraft horror. They're very complete in it, and you find characters that expand across all of the Arkham horror games, locations, lore, all this stuff, just as they've got a really good solid continuity going between all their games. But right now, my number four, Arkham Horror, the living card game, certainly a lot of fun, even if it is super challenging. Okay, we are hitting our number three. Matthew, what do you have for number three?
Well, I didn't want Rodrigo to be the only one in the tabletop RPG land, but it should also be noted that I'm extremely old, like literally hundreds of thousands of years old. And so when I started playing tabletop RPGs, it was actually the 1980s, cue the Flock of Seagulls. And one of the games that we really enjoyed playing, although I'm not entirely sure we played it correctly, having played it in modern times, was based on what they called the Hero System game. It was Champions, the RPG. Champions, of course, most people that I know, which is to say, you know, people who listen to me talk, probably know Champions better from the related comic book series, which is also really kind of cool that the characters in the game actually kind of went on to have their own comic book adventures. But the Champions game played on the Hero System was nice because you didn't necessarily have to do the problematic combo plate balance out numbery thing in order to get your powers together. Your powers were actually more based on the effects that they had. So you could manipulate a particular effect, and then you could flavor it the way that you want it. So say you want to play a character like Professor X. It's going to be hard to do that in a lot of systems. You aren't necessarily going to have like the build points at the beginning. So you're going to have to try and play a young Professor X or something along those lines. But if you honestly want to play an old man with incredible psionic powers who, you know, happens to be in a wheelchair, you can do that within that champion system. Don't necessarily recommend it, but you certainly can put together characters who are more like the archetypes that you see in the comics, those full-fledged characters, rather than with a lot of games having to start with, I have the ability to telekinetically control up to 5 houseflies and then build your way up. Also, what was really fun for me about Champions was interacting with the NPC costumed characters and being able to go, oh yeah, this totally happened. There was this thing in this comic book and we got to see Giant get totally killed, you guys. Oh no, what do we do? Now the characters, you know, could go and play off of that, which I always really enjoyed. And again, you know, when you're in high school, you may not always follow the rules as well as some people might in the future. And that's to say, you know, people who actually read the rules all the way through and figure them out. But it also had a werecat, so that's kind of fun. But my number 3, Champions, the RPG based on the hero system from like 1980, I'm going to say 4? 5? Okay. 5, 4, something like that.
All right, very nice. Rodrigo, what you got?
My number 3 is appropriately the 3rd edition of a game, and that is Exalted 3rd edition. I've enjoyed every edition of Exalted. The game has really built up through its time, and it's nice to see each. I mean, we've only seen it happen twice, but see what each edition keeps, or really, they mostly tend to keep everything, but what they add and what they focus on. A 3rd edition is interesting because they completely overhauled the combat system, and in fact, this is a game with an incredibly rocky backstory. 3rd edition specifically is it took years and years and years past its like past any goals that it had to come out, part of that was because they completely overhauled the combat system, which, you know, it turned out pretty good. It's interesting. It definitely addressed a lot of the issues that happened with previous generation systems or with the combat in previous versions.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been running an Exalted 3rd edition game for about 5 years now. And we are starting to get into the higher level, like echelon of play. If you're familiar with Exalted, the characters are about to be Essence 4. In fact, they already qualify for it. They just haven't sat down to do it. It'll be interesting to see if the game continues to hold up, because as always with most games, it's the low to mid level options that get tested out the most, right? The ones that get the play tested the most.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see if these like high end, like high level options and powers and abilities hold up, or if we're going to I mean, we've already had to do a fair amount of house ruling. Exalted 3rd edition is a huge system, and some of the interactions between the spokes don't really work very well, so it does require some amount of house ruling. So, but still a lot of fun.
Yeah, very cool. Thank you for that. I hear a lot of people talk about Exalted, not ever stepped into that world myself, so.
Yeah.
My number 3 is I got interested in the Arkham Horror board game world way back in, I don't know, had to have been about 10 years ago, when Brad and Brian and Rob and a couple of their friends all invited me over to play a game of Eldritch Horror, which is this massive world spanning game where you're jumping across the globe, trying to shut down portals and stopping monsters and trying to hit goals. And I was sold into that and bought that entire system. But Brad then turned me on to one that came out just a couple of years ago, the third edition of Arkham Horror, the Arkham Horror third edition, where everything just takes place in the town of Arkham itself. And again, all the expansions and all the stories, you can go on and take on specific elder gods. You can go and find creepy crawlies. You can move about the town fairly easily while avoiding or fighting or taking out horrors and cultists and all these other things. When I first saw it announced, I was like, I don't know, this game's not going to be any fun. And then I played it and I was like, oh no, this game is a lot of fun. And it's one that's easily played with one person. I don't think Eldritch Horror is one that can be easily played with one person, although you can. But third edition, there's something about the way that the board is laid out. It's all these, not hex tiles, but eight-sided octagon tiles that are laid out that then interconnect with each other. And then depending on where your character lands, you pick up a little card that tells you what the scenario is in that area as you go around trying to collect clues and stop the older ones from coming through. It's a lot of fun, but just like every other Arkham Horror board game that is out there, there's an incredibly long setup time of sorting cards and sorting pieces and doing all that, and an equal amount of time to put it all away. Actual playtime, even with a single person, can be upwards of 2 hours on this. So you're going to spend, you know, 30 minutes getting the game pieces out, but you're going to get a good hour and a half, 2 hours play at a single person, 3 hours plus if you've got, you know, up to six people playing this game. So it's kind of worth it to check it out. I've really enjoyed it. A brand new expansion I just found out today came out like last month, a couple of months ago. And so that has now been added to my Amazon wish list for me to pick up an ad. So speaking of our Amazon wish lists, we do have an Amazon affiliate link. So if you're looking for any of these games that we've been talking about, you can head over to majorspoilers.com, click on that Amazon link that will take you to our Amazon page. And then anything that you buy through that link that you go through at Major Spoilers will get credit to us. So if you're buying board games, you're buying RPG games, you're buying, I don't know, underwears, whatever it is, you buy it, a little bit comes back our way. And we are eternally grateful for that. So my number three, Arkham Horror, the third edition, Rodrigo, both of us with a third edition in our number threes. So that is a very helpful there. But we are now moving on to our number twos. And Matthew, what do you have for your number two?
Well, now I feel like I should have a second edition. A
second
something.
Edition.
But I'm like, yeah, maybe I didn't. Actually, my number two is a game that once again had, back when, you know, we actually were trying to have the family nights before the universe exploded and everybody went off and did their thing. You know, the child, seniors are just terrible. Steven actually sent this game to us as a Christmas gift. Machikoro, which is a board game basically where you are the mayor of the city of Machikoro and you are attempting to build a city, sort of like a card-based tabletop version of SimCity, except with a few more twists and turns and strange things happening. So like you can build a cheese factory or you can put up a nice theme park. You can make Wally World. But every one of those has a cost and it has a downside. So you will have to try and make the largest city based against whoever you're playing. Usually we play with four players. So we'd have four cities going and each person would then get your cards. You build your city. You come up with whatever resources you need. You put it all together. And then at the end, you count it all up and the child always wins because I'm pretty sure they cheat. But, you know, it's a thing. You kind of live with it. Essentially, when you construct all your landmarks, you make your city, you're good, you win. And it's a game that it does take some time, it takes some energy, but it's not like a game of Monopoly where you can watch seasons changing outside the window and calendar pages flying off. You can see your beard growing. It's a whole thing. Machikoro, it moves quickly. And I feel like if you get to a point where you're like, okay, maybe we're all done. You can actually go at that point and say, you know what? Maybe we're not done. Who has the most points? You still win. That is always something that I really enjoy in a game. That question of what do you do if you can't finish a round? And the answer in this is, hey, you still have a thing. You still have all of the pieces in play. You can come back next time and finish the game. And I feel like that's really cool. It may be the best gift that Steven has given me in recent memory.
What? I gave you a whole collection of Legion of Superheroes action figures. That certainly has got to be better than Machikoro.
That was years ago.
Actually, Matthew, you should have said, and I don't know if you've bought any of the expansions for Machikoro, but there is a Machikoro 2 that you can
Electric
put
into your thing.
So, yeah, those are freely available. When the game first came to America, it was released through IDW Games. And as I mentioned way early at the beginning of the show, IDW Games had to shut down because they weren't making any money. But now other distributors have picked this up. This is a Japanese game that has come into the Americas. And I will echo what Matthew said. Very fun game. Very, very fun.
Yeah. If you've played Monopoly and thought to yourself, I would like to play a game like this, but that actually works.
And is cuter and more fun.
That ends.
I think each game's about 30 minutes long. So it's not like you're committing to this. And it's so easy that I think when my oldest was like 6 or 7 years old, we got this game. And he had no problem picking it up. The instructions are super easy to understand. He even explained it to my wife while I was taking care of the youngest changing a diaper or something. So this is a real easy game. Real easy game. Rodrigo, what do you have for your number two?
My number two is a game that I'm way into right now. It is called Lancer.
Yeah, it is. It's a
game in which you get to play a mech pilot, and then you get to fight other giant robots, and sometimes, you know, kaiju or eldritch abominations or whatever. Really, the biggest selling point for me about Lancer is this is the first mech-based game I've ever read where being in a mech is fun. Most other RPGs that I've come across tend to go very realistic about it and have you like either manage your energy like through like how many like BTUs or whatever you're putting through to something, or there's like tables and tables and tables of what happens when X, Y, or Z damage happens to your mech. Lancer is much more streamlined than that and tends to put forward like the thing that you are spending the most time doing is moving around tactically and either shooting lasers or punching other mechs or weirder stuff if you prefer, because there are some weird mechs in it. I strongly recommend it. You can get the core book without the Game Master stuff for free. Or you can buy the full book, and you can also buy a hardcover book if you're the sort of person that needs physical, you know, books in meat space.
Yeah, there's also an online system to manage the game and your characters, which is just brilliant. But I don't know if that's affiliated with the actual company, if they own it, or if it was a
they don't own it, but it is official. So it's called CompCon. So it's CompCon.app online. And it is probably the best character builder that I've ever come across. And it is just like that ability to work closely with the creators of the game that really, I think, gives it an edge.
Yeah, it's really easy. I really enjoyed Lancers a lot. Very good RPG game. Okay, my number two is one that came out in 2020, and thank goodness it came out in 2020 and it was available for us to play. Marvel United, and then the follow-up expansion to that, X-Men United, or United X-Men, I don't know how they're calling it these days, but Marvel United and X-Men United, you play these little chibi versions of all the Marvel heroes and villains. You've got a circular board that you are moving between different sections of cities or locations, and you are trying to knock out the bad guys, save the good guys, save the citizenry, and punch out the big bad who has his own mastermind plan for the entire game. I don't think you technically need to have the little miniatures, but the miniatures are certainly what make this game so much fun. This is, Simon, Cool Mini or not, however you're pronouncing it these days. But this is just a fantastic game. Again, it's super easy to learn. It's super easy to play. It is very challenging, again, depending on what mastermind you're using. But again, the whole family just loves this game. We will sit down and play it, and everybody gets to choose their own character. If you went in on the Kickstarter expansion, you can get the base boxes for both Marvel United and X-Men, I believe, at Target. And you get, you know, a few figures. You basically get the Avengers in the United set, and then some of the base X-Men from in the X-Men set. But if you go all out and you got all of the expansions and stuff, you basically have the entire Marvel universe that you get to command as far as the heroes go. I mean, there's a Howard the Duck figure that my oldest son loves to play because he says that there's an OP card that pretty much there's a point in the game where you can't damage the mastermind. And then there's a point in the game where it's absolutely necessary for you to damage the villain. You have to do a couple of unlocks first. But I believe the Howard the Duck character allows you to damage the villain even before you've unlocked the challenges on that. So he loves playing Howard the Duck. My wife likes playing Shang-Chi. The youngest, he jumps around between different characters, whichever one he's in the mood for that day. Usually it's a tough brawly guy. I would bet if we sat down to play it now, he would probably be into the Doctor Strange character, or he will usually pick up a Spider-Man character for that. And I don't care. I just want one that's cool and everybody's having fun. The most recent expansions include an X-Men, X-Men, but you've got Fantastic Four in that mix. You've got a whole Thanos quest that you can do in one of them. You've got the Heroes of Asgard in there. It is a massive game. It takes up a lot of space on my storage shelves, but man, it is a fun game. And the next time that Come On drops their next Marvel United expansion, you bet I'm plunking my money down, even though for the last year and a half now, I have not jumped on any Kickstarter campaigns, because I'm waiting for some others to be delivered. But the minute that they announce their next Marvel United game, I'm all over that. So Marvel United is my number two. Okay, we have reached the top of our lists. I know everybody's counting along. Yes, there's five and there's four. Oh yeah, they just did three and then there's two. Now we're ready for number one. I would say that if you're enjoying top five, one of the things that you can do is you can join our community of patrons over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. That's how we're able to keep this show going and keep you entertained week after week, whether it is our version of top five or whether it's Dan Patrice's version of top five, where he shares like some, I think what was the most recent one, the top five negotiation games, which a lot of people talk about. We're able to do that because of all of our valuable community members over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. So if you found this episode fun, if you found it informative, maybe you got some new games that you're going to play, come join our community. We really want to see our Major Spoilers community grow, and we can do that with you coming into the fold. It's not quite like a cult, but, you know, it's getting close. Patreon.com/majorspoilers. And now, as our pyramid schemes often go, let us get to our number ones, the top of the charts. Matthew, what do you have for your number one?
Hey, top of the charts, your big number one on Knicks 103. Sorry, I just had a flashback. My number one is another game that I played when I was a kid, and it's another game that I can't play anymore because the version we had when I was a kid ruined it. But it is a game that dates back to the late 1800s. If you've ever heard of the Milton Bradley Company, this is the game that made Milton a Bradley. However that would go. Yes. It's known these days as the Game of Life. Apparently, it was originally called the Checkered Game of Life, but the Checkers people probably sent a C&D. But the thing that I loved about the Game of Life when I was a kid was that it had a built-in spinner, like a little Wheel of Fortune spinner, like actually attached to the board. And you would go... And you would, you know, roll, you would go through the game. And this was the 70s version. So it wasn't the early one where it's like brought to you by Art Linkletter or some nonsense. But you would go through and you would choose whether you want to go to school or whether you want to learn a trade. And then you would go through and sometimes the game would saddle you with children. You'd get married. You know, you would go through this whole thing of kind of a 70s, 60s expectation of what life could be. And then you would get to the end and you would either go completely bankrupt because you had no money, or you could move into the, you know, the high class area along the other side of the game. And I always kind of liked that theory of going through where you have a little bit more of, you know, it's not really a skill component. a lot of times it's a matter of luck. You can't necessarily say, now I have 17 children and I'm going to, you know, go and live in this bankrupt area. But also you can't not say that. So when you, when you're playing the version that I actually grew up with the game of life, you would spin the wheel, you would go through, and life would hand you what you had, and you had to do the best you could with what you had. And I feel like it taught an important lesson. Actually, it taught two lessons. One, you can't control what life gives you. And two, my big sister Tammy cheats and is a biter. So if you let her play the bank and try to stop her from playing the bank, you will walk away with tooth marks in your arm and you'll still lose the game. And so I feel like that's important. Recently, we, the last few or probably 5 years, we bought a new version and it's just not the same. I mean, now they're like, oh, you can acquire a pet. I'm like, what is this millennial nonsense? I don't need a cat. I have 17 children. But yes, the game of life keeps getting updated and keeps getting changed. And by the way, millennials, I know you're 35, 40 years old and you, you know, you do your thing. It's fine. I'm Generation X. We all just wander around. But the game of life, my number one, you should actually play it. It's a good game.
I've been playing the game of life for years now. Rodrigo, what do you have for your number one?
My number one is a tabletop role-playing game. Mm-hmm. So I guess half of you owe $5 to the other half of you. Wait, that are listening. I don't know. It depends if you put in your bet early enough. But speaking of hedging your bets, it's Changeling the Lost First Edition. That's funny because the way in which changelings acts as the fairy realm is through this thing called the hedge. Anyway, Changeling the Lost is part of the new World of Darkness, right? Because there was an old World of Darkness back in the 90s. Then in the late 2000s, they started rolling out the new World of Darkness. Some of these games I've revisited, just sat down to read them, and I have very much no, and both for Old World of Darkness and New World of Darkness, and I have very much no excitement to play them or run them, except for Changeling. And Changeling really, I think, continues to hold up because, unlike, I don't know, probably 90% of the games in the old and new World of Darkness, it's not a game about predators. It's a game about victims. You still can be a predator in it, but it's not something that demands that you, like, necessarily prey upon the humans. Changelings are fundamentally kind of sad, tragic characters. And it can be a game in which you play someone who tries to get a normal life back together, despite having all this weirdness around them. Or you can play something where your characters are maybe more heroic, or who embrace the fact that their lives have become so weird. I would recommend that anybody who likes role-playing games in general sits down with the core book and gives it a read. It's a very smart book. It's a lot of fun, and it's actually the mythology of it is really cool and very creepy at times. But all around, it's like a good moody game to play on a rainy day, I guess.
All right, there you go. My number one, Rodrigo, I think bore witness to this exchange multiple times. D&D Brian, we would all be over playing Critical Hit. And D&D Brian would say, we should play a game called Street Masters. It's a game where it's like you're playing a beat-em-up side-scroller video game, but you do it in a board game form. And I think you'd really like it, Steven. And I was just like, I don't know, Brian. It sounds not fun.
Have you been sitting on this Brian impression this whole time?
No, that's not my Brian impression.
Oh, okay.
But finally, I was like, okay, something happened and something got canceled. And he's like, I could bring over Street Masters. And I'm like, okay. And so he brought it over and darn heck tootin' if Brian wasn't right that this was the most fun game that I've ever played. It is super challenging. It is super fun. There are so many things going on simultaneously, it feels like, with new bads popping in as you're trying to move your character around and you're trying to follow all the AI systems going on. It seems very complicated at times, but yes, it is a tactical-based board game that makes you feel like you're playing an old side-scroller video game. And it is my favorite game. I have backed the various expansions of this. I am anxiously awaiting the one that I backed. And this is why you never back anything on Indiegogo, people. Was it Blacklist Games has had some problems delivering some of their games recently. So I'm hoping that I get the new expansion to Street Masters, but, this game is great. The miniatures are awesome. Once you start playing the characters and you start reading their backstories and some of their powers, you're like, oh yeah, this character is definitely Bruce Lee. This person is definitely, Van Damme. This character is definitely this person. This guy is definitely, every bad guy. There's a Lee Van Cleef character in the game. There is a, what's his name? I can't remember it. But you'll recognize these characters in games, and situations and movies and everything that they reference in it. And it's just incredible amount of fun. It's a deck shuffling game. So you know what your power set is, and that may oftentimes dictate what character you play because you know the mechanics of that character. And some characters are very easy to play, and some characters are very crunchy. You really need to understand how the cards power up other cards and play off each other in order for this game to play out. And man, it is a game that I want to pull out all the time. Fortunately, I know we're talking about tabletop games, but fortunately there is a Street Masters app for iOS devices. And I believe Google as well. That is the board game turned into, a video game. So it's a video app, a gaming app based on a board game, based on a side scrolling video game. It's come full circle, but it's a great way to learn the board game. But the board game is so much fun. You guys should go pick it up if you can afford it, because it is very expensive. And that's my number one. That's my number one tabletop game. I enjoy that one a whole heck of a lot. Now, here's where you, dear listener, we've already pointed you to our Patreon page. You've already joined our community. If you haven't, we'll wait. Okay, good. Thank you for joining. Now, here's the next thing you need to do. You need to join our Discord community. There's a link in the show notes. You can join the Discord community completely for free. There's a whole bunch of awesome people in there. You're going to see us floating around inside the Discord server every once in a while. I'm in there at least once a day checking on things, making sure everybody's doing well. And then the community there is just awesome. We have channels for all of our podcasts, including Top 5. And so now that you're done listening to the Top 5 Tabletop Games episode, go over to the Discord server, jump into the Top 5 channel, and share your Top 5 tabletop games. Everybody's going to be sharing theirs. Everybody wants to read yours. Why? Everybody loves a list. We'll see you over at Discord, and we'll see you again very soon. Well, we won't see you because this is an audio show, but maybe we can see you. Oh, cover up the camera on your mobile device, especially you.
This podcast is copyright 2022 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.